Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Karen Slaughter, whose brand new thriller, Pieces of Her, is now available from the good folks at William Morrow. In the novel, 31-year-old 911 police dispatcher Andrea Oliver is having lunch with her mother, a divorced speech therapist, Laura, at a small mall in suburban Savannah, Georgia. At the same time, a deranged young man murders a mother-daughter pair who stopped by to say hello to Laura. Andrea sees her own mother, whom she's always known to be a conventional woman, leap from her chair and quickly make short work of this maniacal gunman and leaving him with a fatal neck wound. Andrea starts to wonder where this side of her own mother came from, and does she know her at all? And in a word, no. But the event is captured by someone's cell phone video. It's quickly provided to CNN. People from Laura's past recognize her, and soon Laura is attacked in her own home. Andrea is on the run, although she doesn't really understand who she's running from, and Andrea wonders who is, or rather who was, Laura Oliver, her mother. Karen, without giving too much away, who was Laura Oliver 30 years before this incident at the mall?
Well, she was a complicated young woman. She was a piano prodigy and a performer, and then she had happen what sometimes happens to women. They meet a really bad guy, and Laura was in a very vulnerable position and fell for this con man's charms and ended up doing things that she would not have done otherwise.
Well, and part of Laura's past as well, in addition to having a different name, she was a member of this anarchist group, this Army of the Changing World, and it was kind of like the Weather Underground. Can you kind of explain what you delved into to learn how those type of underground groups work?
You know, the most fascinating thing to me, because I did talk to some FBI agents who are working with cults and revolutionary groups. I mean, they call themselves revolutionary groups, but they're really structured like cults, is that there are so many that still are around. You know, I think of like the SLA with Patty Hearst and the 60s and 70s with Jonestown and, you know, all these horrible things that happen. But there are just people in the world that feel like they're missing a part of themselves, and they're very vulnerable, and a lot of times they're susceptible to these con men who start these groups, you know, and they want to, they convince the person who's joining that they're the ones who know the truth about the world, and everybody else is stupid or clueless, and, you know, they give them a sense of identity that's missing. And, of course, invariably, they want them to do something wrong. And, you know, that's always fascinated me, whether it's something like the Weather Underground where they turn to violence or, you know, any of these other groups that we have today. They all think that they know something the rest of the world doesn't.
For three decades, Andrea knew her mother as someone who never kept a secret in her life. And how much of this thought is just Andrea being naive rather than deception on the part of Laura?
I think it's a combination of both. You know, with children, we want to believe our parents. We want to believe they're good people. You know, we kind of give them a pass on things as we're growing up. We don't want to think about them as having lives before we were born. And, you know, so part of it is just the general parent-child relationship. But I also think part of it is Laura is a really good liar. You know, she's anticipated what Andy's questions will be about her past, and she's got a very good, convenient answer for every question that Andrea has. So, you know, is Andrea gullible, or is Laura just a really fantastic liar? I guess that's up for the reader to decide.
Well, and as you mentioned, we sometimes forget that our parents all have pasts. And so as Andrea digs deeper into her mom's past, what does she learn about her own self as she uncovers all these secrets?
Well, that's an important part of the book, because when we meet Andrea in the beginning of the novel, she's a typical elder millennial. You know, she's been given all these choices about what she can do with her life, and she's so overwhelmed that she's paralyzed. You know, she's terrified of making the wrong choice, so she doesn't make any choice. She's still living above her mother's garage. She's working a job that she doesn't like, that her father got her, that she basically just uses to pay the bills. And, you know, the fact is, when this horrible thing happens in the shopping mall and Andy is forced to go on the run, the further away she gets from home and her mother and her father geographically, the more she comes into herself as a young woman, and the more she realizes, hey, I can't just live my life like an amoeba floating in a petri dish and, you know, move, bouncing off from side to side. I've got to actually make choices and do something with my life.
You've previously said that good crime fiction holds a mirror up to society and tells readers what's going on in the world. And with this in mind, how do you go about not only plotting a novel, but developing the characters as well?
I really just think about the relationships in the novel when I'm thinking about the story. You know, the plot is the fun part with, twists and turns and shocking things happening and doling out the information that the reader needs a piece at a time. But the relationships really are what the story hangs on. And to me, I want to make sure that my characters feel real, that if you don't know someone like Andy, you know, if you know someone who does, or you can imagine them as real people, that's really important to me. I think you can have a fantastic plot and not have good characters and the plot doesn't matter, or the other way around, you know, fantastic characters and a plot that doesn't work, that really doesn't hold a book together. So I'm always conscious when I'm writing about what I want as a reader, and I want both of those things in equal measure. So I really work hard to make these people understandable, relatable, as real people.
My guest is Karen Slaughter. We're talking about her new thriller, Pieces of Her, that is available now wherever your books are sold. Karen, I know I'm comparing two different types of medium, but Alfred Hitchcock used to sanitize the violence in his movies. We would see a dead body, but we wouldn't see exactly what happened to it. You don't sanitize the crime for your readers in the book, and why do you choose to portray it that way?
Well, I mean that's a great example, but also Alfred Hitchcock was dealing with censors, and he pushed them to the limit each time. You know, he had to recut the shower scene in Psycho a couple of times before the censors said okay. I think that with a book, what you have to rely on is that the character brings their own emotions, their own visuals to the story, and all you can do as an author is give them suggestions about what's going on, you know, and then their mind will take you the rest of the way. But I focus on what it feels like to be in that kind of situation. I do a lot of research for my novels. I talk to a lot of police officers, a lot of people who are involved in the forensic end of things, people who are crisis counselors. And to me, I just want to show the crime for what it is. You know, one of the dangers when you talk about violence, specifically violence about women, is if you soften the language, it sort of gives it a pass. You know, if you don't know specifically what happened, then you can't really make a judgment about why the character is behaving the way they do. And that's true in real life. I mean, once we know the details of things, for instance, with the Bill Cosby trial, I mean, what came out during that trial, the women telling their stories and being open and honest about it and using what felt to a lot of people like very frank language about it, it gave an understanding about why they were so angry and why they felt so violated. And so when I write my books, I'm very conscious of that, is that I want to show this for what it is.
Your books are all set in Georgia, and yet they have worldwide appeal. And I've read authors who've set books in my area of Iowa, and really people outside of Iowa don't really care to read them. What is it about the way you choose to use your location that gives it a worldwide appeal? Is there a balance you strike between using too much detail and just making it more generalized so it can relate to everybody?
Well, I think primarily that I started writing about small towns, and small towns are really universal. And I think they all have, even in Iowa or, you know, in Utrecht in the Netherlands or Bondi Beach in Australia, everybody understands how small towns work and how insulated they are, how they can sometimes be isolating, sometimes be comforting, that sense of community, but also the sense that everybody thinks they know your business and they're entitled to all your secrets. I grew up in a small town, so I'm really familiar with all those dynamics. And so I think that the fact that I was writing from a place of honesty about small towns and how much I love them, but also why I was very happy to move away, it gave a sense of place to the books that people could relate to. And, you know, there's nothing more horrific than thinking, I'm living in this small, quaint little town. I grew up here. My parents grew up here. My grandparents grew up here. And then something horrible happens. It makes it even more shocking. And so I think having that safety net of a small town and the universality of it, and then having a violent crime happen in the middle of that, was something that people could relate to, because it's something that you worry about when you live in a small town.
You're known for your thrillers, and so many of the great classic books, though, have these spectacular crimes, which are part of a lot of thrillers. Think back to Kill a Mockingbird, Great Gatsby, but those books aren't considered thrillers per se. What takes a book from a spectacular crime to a thriller?
I think it's all just marketing, you know, and also if a lot of people who consider themselves really, really smart like a crime novel, then suddenly they say it's not a crime novel, it's literature. I'm kind of glad to be in the crime novel genre, because I think my readers are extremely loyal. I'm a crime reader myself. I really identify with the crime reading and writing community. But I think also distance gives you some perspective. You know, if you ask me what a current American writer is going to be taught in schools the way Dickens is in 100 years, I would absolutely say someone like Stephen King or Ann Tyler, because I think they're telling very American stories. And I think if you want to know what life is like for people right now when these books are being written, that they give a very honest opinion about people and society and the world, and especially with King, you know, when he writes his crime novels or his short stories, without the horror bent, he's telling what it's like to be an American right now in the world.
All right. Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you. It's Karen Slaughter. Her new novel is Pieces of Her. It is a thriller, and it is just fantastic. Karen, excellent offering, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
My pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.